this in our time, as you've assured us there is the perpetuity of the same for us. We thank thee for the great spiritual center of thy kingdom, thy church, for the reinvention that as its process continues to do the work that you've ordained, that it brings in the catalyzation of spiritual energy, in the revelation of thy will and of thy purpose, shall it also empower thy people to carry forward the directive, that it becomes a great pulsing heart center of the nations of thy kingdom. As we commit ourselves with our hand, we pray that you will open up our eyes to truth, that you will cause us to see that in thy word has been contained the great secret, and as we behold these things, grant unto us, our Father, that the most important thing shall be the establishment of thy kingdom of righteousness, which is our inheritance. So we commit ourselves with our hand, saying, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, for in the earth. As we're talking upon a subject that in itself possesses quite a unique challenge, because it is the story of a power utterly designed to rule the world, a power whose evil is far greater than many people recognize, and whose strategies reach out to in many avenues. We have discussed with you in the past the symbol of mystery Babylon the Great, but it is identifiable in the Scriptures, and especially in the New Testament, as Christ unveils these mysteries to John in the book of Revelation. But all the evil power in the three branches of mystery Babylon, political, social, in its design, and its economic strategies, are outlined here: Satan, Antichrist, false prophet, or beast, Antichrist, and false prophet. But the beast system is symbolical of the political system of the masses that are under the control of Babylon. Let the false prophet or all the false religions and false processes which are advocated out of the evil and out of the false and anti-Christian powers that are thus designed. Let the very seed of the dragon, the unassimilatable household of Lucifer and his offspring, dominate and control the programs of anti-Christ and anti-God. And so the three unclean frogs of Revelation that gather men to the struggles of the climax of this age, actually again are the symbol of beast, anti-Christ, and false prophet, the dragon, the false prophet, and the beast system with its economic power. But when we turn to mystery Babylon in the book of Revelation, we note that the Scripture makes it very clear that it wields its power over all of the areas of production, that it wields its influence and control over all branches of crafts, and until each and every individual working in almost any craft or trade has to be subject to the organizations which they dominate, and to the levels of measure which they control. Thus it is that the pattern of controlled unionism and the pattern of the vast control over all industry, raw materials, finance, and all of the industries that can thus be controlled are in the hands of mystery Babylon. When God talks about the program of mystery Babylon, he proves that it is a program of Antichrist. That is directed against the white race, against Christian civilization, against the nations of God's kingdom, and therefore all the great nations of the Western world. When we point this out, we discover that God tells you that that the people of his race, of his household, you that are his household, are deeply embroiled in the machinations of this evil power. That it affects many areas of your life, of the control of rulers of your nations, of kings and of leaders, of presidents, of the leaders of state, also enmesh because of the strategy of their operations. No wonder God says, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partaken of her sins and receive not of her plagues. For her transgressions have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities and is going to reward her as she has rewarded you. He's going to reward her double, it says, and do double according to her works, in which she has filled the cup of her judgments and wrath and her evil. It shall be filled unto her double. And in that day there shall be no more of her plagues, no more of her mournings, no more of her famines, no more of her shortages of bread, her artificial scarcities, her created depressions, her economic crisis, her war, upon which she fattens herself at your expense. Mystery Babylon, these are her works. God talked about her and said in that day her merchants will mourn, and merchants of the earth order will weep because they will be unable to carry out their merchandise, for her merchandise controlled the gold and the silver, the precious stones, the pearls, the clothing industry with its linens, its purple and silk, and its scarlet, all manners of the vessels of ivory, and the manners of the vessels of metal, all precious metals, and of all of the areas of the ointments,
and of the drug industry and all the pharmaceutical processes that accompany it. They sought to gain control over transportation, and in their domination, as they sought by public opinion to control all the avenues of it, they actually became dealers in the souls of men. Now, this is what the Scripture says about Mr. Babylon. He says, alas, this is the city of international merchants, and he points out that the hour will come when heaven can rejoice over it. Rejoice, all ye holy apostles. Rejoice, all you prophets of God. Rejoice, you who are the saints of the Most High God, because God will have avenged with his judgments all the evil that they have created. He's going to use the kingdom as part of his instrument. He's going to bring it coming crashing down, swallowing it up with peoples of earth. It'll be like a mighty angel taking a millstone and casting it into the sea. Thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down, and it shall be found no more at all. I just want to point out something here. Babylon is not going down, my friends, in any other procedure according to the Scripture than by violence. For it has been the creator of violence and of trouble and of war. It has exploited men, it has exploited labor, it has exploited producers, it has exploited every individual that's a part of the nations of God's kingdom. Now, in case you would like to know who operates Babylon, there is an identification here. It says that by merchants, by international ones, by merchants, who became the great and powerful men of earth, by their sorceries, they had all the nations deceived. And in this mystery Babylon has been found the blood of the prophets and of all the saints and offspring of the Most High and of all of the people of righteousness and honesty and justice that have been slain in earth. So you have a little idea about the machinations of Babylon. Now there are a lot of people that in they start looking for mystery Babylon. They see that it's stretched over several areas of operation, of great international political intrigue in order that they might become the masters politically over the souls of men. They see also that by its false policies and philosophies, it has influenced and created false religions and sought to destroy even the Christian faith. It sought by mediums of public opinion and by mediums of communication to affect people everywhere throughout the earth. And so some have looked upon it in this manner. Others, recognizing that there is a satanic phase to its power, recognize it's the manipulation of the economy of the earth that gives it its power. Now, whenever you start to talk about manipulation of the economy, people back up. They tell me that there's just one subject we're never to discuss on the air, or they'll put us off, and that's international finance or the money question. Imagine that. You can talk about anything. In fact, even you can attack them in their policies, you can attack them in everything you do. If you don't talk about this one thing, the way they manipulate and control the world by the control of the money system. Well, there isn't anything that he's talking about, we can talk about everywhere or anywhere. We think this is most important. Now, Mystery Babylon is not only a process of evil, but it becomes a very hot center under Revelation of all the assault, all the attack, of all the lies of world powers, the gathering the hordes of world communism, the great assault that comes from the pagan powers against you, all this chalk it up, Mystery Babylon. Now you say, if all this evil, if all the dope industry and all the vice and all the lecherous business and corrupting the souls of men, if the putting on of corruption and viciousness and vice even in your motion picture industry, or the selling of salacious and evil material to your youth, is all a part still of the plot, the conspiracy, and the money-mad powers of Babylon, then, my friends, we better find out who it is and eliminate Babylon as quickly as possible. That is in the book of Timothy, since this is the power of great evil, some things which in their instance reveal a little bit about Mystery Babylon. It tells us about the real secret. You want to know how to fight evil, and you want to know what the secret of it is, then you turn over to the 6th chapter of 1 Timothy, and here's what you'll read. It says, therefore, look out for these who in their evil, these particular type of rich, who fall to this strange temptation instead, for the love of money is the root of all evil. Hear this now. The love of money is the root of all evil. You say, well, now if we're going to look for the power of Antichrist in Mystery Babylon, you can go right to the heart of it, because the love of money is the preponderance of the desire and the motivating force of Mystery Babylon. In fact, it's not always intelligent, but still it functions as a terrific and sinister power. Remember that Lucifer, who decked himself with gold, silver, and jewels, and beheld himself so enriched and enhanced by the money which he felt he controlled, looked upon himself and his wealth as more important than his control over the universe and over solar systems that had previously been at his disposal. Now let me point out to you this. That when Jesus points out in his teaching, both in Matthew, that these powers which he was opposed to, which he was exposing, the false Pharisees, and among them the scribes and the Sadducees inside of Jerusalem, and in Matthew he said, that these evil powers were the children of the serpent or the viper, were the children of the dragon, which dragon seed is the name applied to Lucifer in the 12th chapter of Revelation, and which peoples were unassimilatable, utterly evil, not to be permitted to become a part of the church. And so evil, Jesus said, that on them comes the blood of all the righteous that have been slain upon the earth. Now, Jesus has reiterated this in the book of Revelation concerning Mystery Babylon and its masters, a satanic and evil force which throughout generations dominated the powers of great nations and tremendous kingdoms. Of course, Babylon as an empire was dominated by this same group of bastards who even controlled it with a false religion that they had established while they fought through Babylon and through its armies to extend their economic control all over the world. When Daniel the prophet was given his vision, remember concerning Babylon, God unveiled to him the interpretation of the vision so that he might tell the king, and he said, Babylon, thou art this head of gold. Now, there is nothing wrong with gold, there is nothing wrong with silver. Unless men put gold and silver as more valuable than human life, than divine law, than principles and reason. When that comes, my friends, we have reached an unbalance which is satanic in its origin. And when it becomes under the manipulation of Satan's own descendants and literal descendants. When I tell you that Satan's literal descendants are the masters of Mystery Babylon, I'm not exaggerating anything, I'm only telling you how it functions. I'm not going to go through the whole background tonight for the limitation of time of all of the strategies of Mystery Babylon from Babylon on down to the time of Christ and from Christ's time to yours. Other than to tell you that this evil satanic power with the fall of Babylon moved to the Isle of Pergamos and also that they moved and operated from this area into controls inside of Palestine until they had third king of the Jews ruling over it in the time of Christ's birth. That the power of organized Jewry was against the real house of Israel, the real men of Judah and Benjamin, and they hated Christ because they recognized that in his messianic ability he was exposing them for what they were trying to do. I don't say that this is an unjust position to take in this hour to transfer this same descending relationship to Jewry of today, but I'm going to prove to you in the next few minutes that organized Jewry of today is the masters of Mystery Babylon the Great. That they are also the heads of and controllers of all the international banks of the world, and that the international bankers of the world are the greatest enemy of Christian civilization. Someone said, you're against banks? I'm against banks the Jews control at the expense of Christianity. Someone said, you're against capitalism? No, I'm not against capitalism. I'm against a fraudulent substitute for capitalism called international banking. I want you to remember that for some time the design for the destruction of Christianity had been worked on by Jewry. That they couldn't accomplish this by having Rome put all the Christians to death in the Colosseum. They then tried to join the Christian church and condemn its doctrines in Rome as well as other parts of Europe. Only partially successful, they were unable to obscure the faith of the many in Christ and the great truths that were laid to Christian society. So they carried out the blueprint of their desire. In seeking then to gain other ways of control. They actually financed with their international marketing program and merchants which they sent backed by money and by the power of their gold to buy weapons and to build up great men and make conquerors out of them. They actually gathered and trained a man from the steppes of Asia, Genghis Khan. They brought him the weapons. They made him the coalitions. They joined together the tribes. They did this with the power of their money to hurl the hordes of Asia against Christian civilization. And they had a deal on to split the spoils in every rabid city and town. I can quote Martin Luther for that, and I can show you the historical context of a number of historians from Harry Lamb on down, and I can establish for you clearly that they tried this, but they failed. Because the hand of God stepped in to defend you against the power of their gold and the exploitation of their great desire to destroy, to rob, and divide the spoils of Christianity. And this failing, they tried a new course. They designed that the knighthood of Christendom could stop this evil conspiracy, so now their design would have to be that they would have to gain control of the economy of men and of nations. I'm not going to go back to the all the strategies that were involved, other than to tell you that they had formed, as we mentioned once before, back in the early 1776, the Illuminati. And under Adam Weishaupt, you remember that they designed how they were going to take over the world with their illuminated masters, financed by their world economic masters, and that they would have their uncrowned kings, the world jewelry, with which they would plan and conspire against all the nations of the world. More than that, they set up and created that masterful group of designing scheming rascals that produced the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, that produced the doctrines of the Illuminati and formed this insidious organization to spread out in the periods of time to take over the earth. They already had and already knew that they had a strongly established group of buying, selling gold lenders who were now designing to take over all the economy of all nations as they had previously manipulated great empires in the time of Babylon. In fact, I cite to you that among these things we turn to the words which I'm going to read to you of Anselm Mayer, who took the name of Rothschild to start the House of Rothschild and one of the great monetary baronages for the control of the earth. And this man, Anselm Mayer, who gathered together a great group of international Jews who are now forming a part of the Illuminati leaders, said, "Economic mastery will be ours. Let me control a nation's currency, and I do not care who makes its laws." Now, this was the beginning of the strategies of this House of Anselm Mayer, and Rothschild became his name, and the international conspiracies that operated under this for the sheer love of power and the desire to rule the world were to extend that power all over the earth. Remember that when America was just a newfound nation being forming, that it was Anselm Mayer who financed the Hessians that fought against you, and then through Samuel Morris and Hyman Solomon, who was nothing but a phony old crook in New York and ran a Jew trick over on the colony. They passed the money into the hands of Congress to buy the arms to fight against Britain, while at the same time he was supplying Britain with the money to hire the Hessians to fight against us. And all the time, he was double-crossing us by the strategy with which another Jew named Samuel Morris, who should have been hung by his neck because he was no patriot, was trying to calm the economic control of all the colonies, and the matters of it are a matter of record. And when Benjamin Franklin came back from Europe after he'd been detained, so he couldn't bring the finance where it came directly from those that would have underwritten the battle of the colonies for liberty, he pointed out to the Congress what had happened and how a tremendous percentage of usury was charged against the colonies and an agreement to virtually give them economic control of banking in the colonies. I only point that out to show you how far-reaching some of these desires go. Now, I think that it's a rather significant thing that we go into a lot of the ramifications of things which transpire. For instance, I am reading from a report here, and by the way, I came back from Washington, as you know, about a year and a half ago, with over 5,000 photostat microfilm documents out of the archives building of the United States government, and we are putting these now back into print, and we're going to start distributing them just as fast as they become usable for us. And they prove, this whole set of documents, documented and sealed, they prove, my friends, that international world jewelry is the mastermind behind all international finance, the creator of communism, and the creator of every destructive force trying to destroy you and your liberties today. I think it's rather interesting that Anselm Mayer got together with a number of these organizers and said that they must extend and support all kinds of institutions that would seem to be seeking to liberate men, to gain control over the masses, to give themselves strength for their revolution. I think that it's significant in understanding it that we know how far each of us goes. I'm just going to call this to your attention, since Mystery Babylon is related with the hordes of little communism, all the powers of darkness that come against you. I'm going to call your attention that in March 1917, it was Leon Trotsky who was speaking in New York City to 300 trained revolutionaries, and he was speaking in Rabbi Lech Samuel's synagogue in Brooklyn, where it still stands and where it still uses the revolutionary headquarters against America. And they were getting ready then to embark for Russia within a few days, in which 2 days after this they did embark for that so-called closed car invasion that was to go into Russia and to seize the Tsar, who thought he really had some visitors coming in as some musicians. Well, this is the statement that Mr. Trotsky made in that final speech. He said, "You must not imagine that this revolution is dependent on the nickels and dimes of the American working class, for behind us stand the most powerful financial institutions in the world." Hear this now. This is Mr. Trotsky talking to 300 Jews that had gathered Rabbi Rep Samuel's synagogue. "Behind us stand the most powerful financial institutions in the world." He says, "We're not just working on the nickels and the dimes of the working class. Did you know?" And some of you may not remember back that far because you were not here, but others might. But the facts are, the documents show, that they went out to the silk mills and to the branches where American labor were being organized by these rascals, and they collected dimes and nickels and dollars from Americans misguided to help overthrow the Tsar for the Trotsky Revolution. Now listen to this. But he said, "Don't think that this revolution of the American working class is built on nickels and dimes of the American working class. Behind us stand the most powerful financial institutions in the world." Now, the United States government have an official document. That official document in the archives building is known as the Sisson Report. Now, the Sisson Report contains some very significant things. This document was prepared by David R. Francis, who was the United States Ambassador to Russia at the time that it was published, and the United States Government Printing Office published it under Foreign Relations of the United States, 1918, Russia, Volume Number 1. Now, under this, it declares in this document that our agents discovered conversations between the agents of the Imperial Bank of Germany, which was under the complete control of Max Warburg. Assistant with him was banker Rubinstein, Parvis, Israeli Lazarevich, Heflin. Now, document 9 out of the same set of government reports which we have just named said within this that a letter which is involved written to the banking house of Mr. Warburg said that they had just finished the undertaking and it is all now sealed, that the money and the arms will be backed by Mr. Warburg from the German branch of the bank and will be on hand for the revolutionists for this revolution in Russia. More than this, it's signed by J. Furstenberg, and the money which is to go to Comrade Trotsky, it says here, will be delivered with the arms. Now, Warburg's brother, who was financing this conquest of Russia from Germany. Now, this is what the document said. But another Warburg brother had just become a citizen of the United States. This man, with a partner, Jacob Schiff, of Kuhn Loben Company, was aiding in financing from the United States the same revolution. Now, here are the documents. More than that, the Jewish Encyclopedia and also the Encyclopedia of Arts tells us, and Social Sciences, that the Schiff Company are financed and under the management of Warburg negotiating the loans a large part of the Red Revolution. Now listen. Also, we read these words. I want you to see this connection. Cyrus Adler was one of the founders of the American Jewish Congress. He wrote a book called Jacob A. Schiff. I have these two volumes in my library. Conversant with this report. The Rothschild and Schiff families, who lived in the same house in Frankfurt a century and a half ago, had migrated to the United States. The Schiffs remained merchants for years, and the Rothschilds quit selling old clothes, began selling money. This is their own report. They said the Schiffs entered the field of merchant bankers, and John Schiff, the uncle of Jacob, became a partner in a small banking firm of Kuhn Loben Company in 1865. Now, note, it says here that Ernst Castle of Cologne Castle, now a director of the Bank of England, Young Jacob Schiff, 1847 to 1920, came to the United States to become a member of the firm of Kuhn Loeb & Company. He married Theresa Loeb in 1885, became the senior partner in Kuhn Loeb & Company. In the Encyclopedia of Social Sciences, volume 18, page 6, note, because of the connections of other banking houses throughout Germany, Holland, England, Kuhn Loeb & Company became the leading agency through which European capital was now going to be invested in American railroad enterprises. It's important now to note that through the connections of Kuhn Loeb & Company, Jacob Schiff, the Warburgs, and the mergers which were made by this international house of world jury, that they established their own offices in New York and gained administrative control over a great number of firms. Firms that were brought under and connected now with them were N.R. Rothschild & Sons, the Stern Brothers, Segelman Brothers of the Morgenthau family, Japhet & Company of Frankfurt, London, New York, by way of Jacob Schiff. J. Henry Sloter & Company, Brown Shipley & Company, David Sassoons & Company, Herbert Wagg & Company, Hambros Litigated, Bryson's & Company, Ruffer & Sons, Buchins & Kuhn Life, Lywert & Sons, Grant & Sons, Atherbert & Rathen, Raphael & Sons, Samuel Montag, Morgan Grenfell, Lazard Brothers, and these are just some of the banks and leading banks throughout Europe, and some of them with their American offices that Kuhn Loeb & Company took over in the matter of a few decades. Now, the Encyclopedia of Social Sciences says in 1897 the Schiff family joined its destiny of with E.H. Harriman. And during the struggle, they took over much of Hill Morgan interest, and Schiff worked so closely that he soon dominated the National City Bank of the Rockefellers, and Schiff became director of the National City Bank. Thus, the Rockefeller fortunes became captive to international jewelry, even though there has been a great hassle to try to save and separate some of this fortune. Now, I point out to you this. The Warburgs were driven out of Spain in 1492. They settled in Hamburg in 1798. They formed the banking firm of Warburg & Company. 1900, two Warburgs, Paul and Felix, came to the United States. And these international Jew refugees have been a part of every left-wing, liberal, and destructive program that has been bringing your nation down into Babylon's maw. I said tonight we'd name the names and we would bring to you a rather correlated record. Remember that Felix Warburg married Nina Loeb of Kuhn Loeb & Company. Paul married Frieda Schiff, the daughter of Jacob Schiff. Felix's daughter, Carl, married a Rothschild. Now the fortunes of the Warburgs and the Kuhn Loeb & Company and the Rothschilds, together with the dominant power over the Harrimans and even over Rockefeller interests, were established in the American monetary market. No wonder, my friends, we get such a nut as we have in Harriman over in the Asiatic Theater, who turns and tells Mr. Rosen, our ambassador, when he opposed selling out Lao and forcing him in the coalition government and cutting off support against the fighting the communist armies. It was Harriman, a descendant in a part of this same situation, that turns and says, "What do you think you're working for, God? You're working for the Kennedy administration, not God." I want you to note that the Jewish Encyclopedia makes a listing here. They said that the Warburgs are one of the most powerful extended families, that they have control in banks in 28 different cities. Germany, Austria, Sweden, Japan, China, South America, Cuba, France, India, England, and the United States are also the nations where they have the first economic and financial control. I think it's important for you to know this, that Paul Moritz Warburg is given the credit in the Jewish Encyclopedia for coming to the United States for the express purpose of making the United States an international banker control nation. That's in the Jewish Encyclopedia. So goes your private enterprise, your great pattern, your great liberties, your great freedom into these crooked dividers and destroyers of economy. Now, the Federal Reserve System was created in the mind of Paul Warburg. He is known as the father of the Federal Reserve System, and so I'm just going to quote something to you. Paul Warburg wrote in the book, The Federal Reserve System and Its Origin and Growth, "I do not claim to have originated this banking principle, But from my arrival in America, I was impelled to observe and to fight for the fundamental principles of its adoption. He was also named, as you know, to the Aldrich Banking Committee and Committee on Currency, and thus he becomes the advisor, together with a number of these other rascals, for the destruction of our society. Warburg became the head of the Federal Reserve Board, while his brother Max headed the same German equivalent. And you know, this is a rather significant thing, that while America and Germany were at war, while Warburg was in charge of the banking on one side, the other American power was in charge of banking, other Warburg was in charge of banking on the other side. A rather significant thing that way back in this World War I, that Paul and Felix were members of international banking firms, the J.S. Bach and Company, and when Morgan and Company was forbidden to lend the French government any money. Why? Because they hadn't gained full control yet of Morgan and Company, and they didn't want anybody making any money in the war but the Jews. So our government forbade Morgan and Company to loan the French any money. So Jacob Schiff intervened with President Wilson and agreed that France could obtain credit, if not money, for Morgan and Company. But to do this, it was to save Morgan and Company from bankruptcy by letting Jacob Schiff make Morgan a company, a partner of Kuhn Loeb, under their direction. So to save one company from going under, it had to submit until that bank passed into the hands of Kuhn Loeb and Company. Now, Kuhn Loeb and Company had now established control over a large part of all the banks in the Western world. In fact, we had discovered that when Jacob Schiff died in 1920, it was Felix Warburg who took over the management of the Schiff interests. I only mention this to just show you the tie-in we have here between these powers. I think that it's important now that you recognize how far these barons go in the cutting out of their desires. The Rothschilds, who gained such power, soon were overshadowed by the Warburg power, and Goldman Sachs, Kuhn Loeb & Company, Lehman and Hardiman dominated now the banking system and were all federated with Rothschild, but were even more powerful than the Rothschild interest. So does this mean much to me? Then let me tell you something. It were these interests, and it is this group of bankers that predominantly fill the Council of Foreign Relations and the business advice. It is this group of bankers that predominantly fill the Council of Foreign Relations and the Business Advisory Council in the United States. And tonight, if you are not aware that the most dangerous single facet of international intrigue in the United States is the Council of Foreign Relations, for it is making the policy of the United States government, and had the nerve to come out in the Times just a matter of 2 weeks ago to say that there had been a request for admission to this body by some 25 or 30 men, who all of whom were listed, and most of them were bankers, but they could not be permitted to come in until they had finished closing the policy-making process for the next 2 weeks, which was to determine the foreign policy of the United States government for the next 6 months. Now we put that in the newspaper. Now what organization would have the nerve to say, we're determining the next 6 months foreign policy of the United States, and so we're too busy to take anybody in that's not acquainted with the problem we're now working on? I tell you, anytime any group of men outside of our government determine our foreign policy, this time we put them, my friends, in a concentration camp for our safekeeping. I want to point out something to you concerning this same situation. The 16th of February, 1962, this is this year, the Nybrook Messenger came out to say that the Rothschilds have now given new millions to Israel ally. Jerusalem, February 14th, Edmund James E. Rothschild Memorial Group has just given 6 million Israel ally pounds for the construction of the new building known as the Knesset Israel Parliament, and have contributed an additional £1,700,000 for the continued development of the same purpose. So international Rothschild banking interests, headquarters in Western America, in Zurich, Switzerland, and dominating the banks of 5 countries, are paying for the building of the parliament in Israel, and dominate and control the direction of that country. I think you'd be interested in knowing also that I have a financial report concerning this group, and the House of Rothschild and the Rothschild interest, together with this international banking syndicate, have gained control and concession to 50,000 square miles of mining country in Canada and almost all of its choice uranium fields. Think that over now. An organization which the Rothschilds have recently formed among their organizations, and it goes back into the protocols of the Learned Elder Design and some of these strategies, is Alliance Israeli Universal. In other words, this is a Jew alliance for the ruling of the world, and they planned on it, formed and created this operation so they could hide behind it. They are the creators of political Zionism. They backed Herzl. They backed Chain Weizmann, and they have been strongly behind the officials that are present in government in Israel Ally, and they can operate all over the world, all their machinations of secret societies behind this idea that they're trying to rebuild Palestine with this phony chosen people program that they laugh at because they created this yarn to sell Christians. Now, within this same scope, there are some things I think that are rather significant that you understand. The international banking group have gained control of, finance and direct, a great number of merchants and institutions directly in the United States, Federated Department Stores, Allied Department Stores, Interstate Department Stores. They have control of the National Department Stores, and of course R.H. Macy, Gimbel's, and Robert Lehman is the director of Associate Dry Goods Corporations. Now let me bring this out. They have the controlling financial force, controlling the retailing interests of Lehman Brothers, and they played the role for Woolworths Company. They are the financiers of W.T. Grant and S.H. Crescent Company. They dominate the grocery retailing firms and food department stores, Jewel Tea Company, Kroger and Company, American Stores, and others. Now, the Lehman Brothers are in control through this same international block of banking of all the financial interests of General Foods Corporation, National Dairy Goods Products. And this came out of the manipulation of the conditions that followed the Depression, which they manipulated completely. Now, National Dairy Products, Abaco Manufacturing Corporation, B.T. Babbitt Company, Yovis Lens Company, Brunswick Ball Colander Company, Welch Grape Juice Company, Alden's Incorporated, Gaylord Container, International Silver Company, Kimberly and Clark, Phoenix Hosiery, A. Stein and Company, Ben Rinaldi Company, Collins Aiken Corporation, Duplan Corporation, Reeves Brothers, United Merchants and Manufacturers, General Cigar Company, Philip Morrison Company, P. Rollers and Company, Fruit Coat Company, Essex Wire Company, Black and Decker Manufacturing Company, and Ray Creed Gas Company, and Iowa Manufacturing Company, and this is just a few. In the metallurgical areas, in the oil areas, they control Lehman Brothers, the Tidewater Associates, Union Oil Company, control financially Halliburton Oil Well Cementing Company, and National Supply Corporation. Metallurgical processes, Lehman Brothers claim, American Metal, American Potash and Chemical, Cleveland Cliffs, Climax Molybdenum, and Republic Steel. Then, of course, there's a whole lot of other things, American Export Lines, American Flag Transatlantic Carriers, and then they underwrote Studebaker for some time, took over Kelly Springfield Tires, Electric Auto Light, Dayton Rubber Company, and Throw-Up Trailer Company, and we could go on down in a whole group of them. Lehman Brothers and Hattaman Company, International Banking, Control Aviation Corporation, and have the banking relations of Pan American Airlines, American Airlines, National Airlines, Capital Airlines, Continental Airlines, and Sperry Corporation. I'm not going on to read this long list. I just want you to see I have a list here that involves about 27 colleges and universities that control a rather unique situation here. They have, and I can give you a list here, they are the creators, and with Cecil Rhodes, who is Cyrus Rhodes as well, who are part of their banking organization, and subordinate to them, they set up foundations, which foundations were for bright students who had financial need or would be selected by their high scholarship for a special service in education, known as Special Rhodes Scholarship. These Rhodes scholarships were to send these bright and apt young men, especially did they desire them, to come out of Christian families, because they would use them as fronts in their design to take over the world, and they discussed this. They sent over 600 of these Rhodes scholars to special training in universities through special courses while they utilized and planned on their careers to accomplish their results. They set up with this scholarship program a special type of training for internationalism, which they were continually selling to carry out their objectives. They set up a great group of foundations whose design was to control the public mind and sell them on eventual abolition of nationalisms and the creation of an international world state. Now, of these foundations, and you found how many of them in the last few years support socialism and liberalism, and they spend millions and millions and millions of dollars, which they've already swiped from you anyhow by their manipulations, to back these foundations, to sell you as though these are the academic standards of the world on all the policies to lend your nation and place you under world boards. The World Board and the World Monetary Fund are important to them because they were the designers and creators of the concept that the World Monetary Fund of the United Nations was going to be their dominated instrument for controlling every pattern and transaction in the face of the earth. You know, as we just hurriedly tell you that in the Civil War they financed and made available the monies for the South, and they made available the finance and monies for the North. They actually stimulated the conditions to produce crisis and were driving the federal government into a very foolish position. And when Abraham Lincoln found it out, he said, if I'd known what this was all about, I never would have been pushed into this thing. I never would have made one move that would have created this civil war. He says, all the Negroes in America are not worth what they have precipitated. Mm-hmm. Abraham Lincoln said that. I've got it in my own library under his own writing. Now listen. When they couldn't get him to sign over a note of the whole United States as assets for security, what a tremendous useless design by putting a kind of bond issue that would have given him over 30% interest. When Abraham Lincoln said, how can you do this? These Jew bankers said, we can do this by our faith in America's ability to produce and taking this note on its assets until the production repays it. Abraham Lincoln looked at these Jew bankers. He said, let me tell you something. If you've got faith in America's production to do this at this useless profit, I will issue United States notes interest-free, and I will redeem them from circulation by the same profit as it's produced. So they killed him. Whether you know it or not, the man Booth who shot Abraham Lincoln was a member of the Warburg family, and this word Booth was only a front name, was not the original name of the family. But the records of the history of the family and its connections, he was a Warburg. These are just some of the things to think about. Back in Depression, when it hit in the Great Depression of the 30s, 29, the thing that started the market crashing was this group of banks withdrew credit from major organizations so they couldn't meet their payrolls, buy their raw products, and carry on the program of their industry. And since they had been conned into developing their whole strategy of payrolls and of purchase of raw materials and of marketing their products through the instrument of these agencies, when this money was suddenly pulled out from under them and all other avenues of credit were cut off, they had to close their doors and let men out of work. And also, at the same time, they were guiding a design for the pulling back of such credit as to make a financial crisis quite imminent and to make impossible the purchase of large areas of goods which were dependent upon this flow of money. The result was, as stocks went on the market, the Jews threw more stocks on the market, and then as the market crashed, they rushed in to buy it up at low figures, sometimes throwing it back on the market again to lower it within a few days. But when it was over, these Jews had gained control of over 40% of all the industry and businesses in the United States. It's a matter of stock records, and we could go into long detail and prove it. And I want you to know that they're behind this one, too. The bloodstream of Babylon is money. The way they operate as parasites is to live on usury. It's not the putting of their money to work in production that they might share in that production. It's not, my friends, the backing of the farmer and the sowing of his seed to share in the increase in his field. It's the kind of usury that takes away the field. If not, my friends, a mutual investment with the possibilities of rain bringing blessing or of a drought that brings the capacity for the crop not to come through, they take no chances. They do not work with the individual. They only anticipate that the law of averages will sooner or later give them a dry year and they'll confiscate.
Well, I point this out to you, that all through the history of our nation, we have watched this manipulator move in, as Benjamin Franklin had warned us never to let them move in at all, gaining more and more control. In my library are the private papers of Colonel House. Colonel House was a half-breed Jew who was the enigmatic figure that was so close to President Wilson. It was the engineering of Colonel House that forced and formed the Federal Reserve System. It was a direct function which he was doing while acting as the confidant of the president in order to put the control of the monetary affairs of America in the hands of the Jews. And I've got a letter that's written to him in his private papers by Jacob Schiff of Kuhn Loebing Company. He said that you've rendered your mother's people a great service. You have delivered the monetary affairs of the United States into our hands. For this, we will never forget you. You can write a check on any of our banking houses anytime, anywhere in the world, as long as you live, and you'll be honored. America had been turned over to the Jews. I have some of their financial sheets and their own discussions, and I have documents which we brought back from Washington, D.C., photostatic documents, and you know one of the things that they said. Now, here's the thing. You know, right in the records in your library in Washington and your archive buildings are all the records and discussions of even the conspiracies, and you had people smarter in earlier times that recorded these things, but they were always filed away. They never were put in headlines because you know who controlled the press. In these documents, one reading Jew writes, "It is important that the American people never find out that we have financed the Russian Revolution. If they realize that we have financed the Russian Revolution and that the program of Jewry and communism were synonymous, it would be a hard day for us in the United States." That's their own writing. They took it right out of government records. Listen. This strategy, this lifeblood of Babylon, operates on the program of usury. The Word of God says, "Thou shalt charge no man usury." That didn't mean that you couldn't invest in the project of one of your friends or of someone in which you entered into a business program to supply maybe the necessary monetary capital to put such an operation into its program. But you must become partner with this interest or this operation. It's ownership investment that was approved where you bought in. But if you loan this on a usury that can foreclose on the man's possessions and take away everything he had, if the venture was not mutually successful, it's condemned of God. There has never been a period in our time when we have been so much at the hands and the mercy of these international rascals who are the bloodstream of the forces of darkness by the manipulation of currency. They are the forces that rule behind the scenes. Now they have been using unpredicated evil. They are willing to use men doped by various types of narcotics or by the deadly raw silk process with which they grind this stuff so small, feed just a small part to an individual that they are unaware that they have received it, and their minds become utterly suggested, subject to the suggestion of anybody who puts concepts in their mind. They cannot reason in any area where they are fed the material and the pressure oft-repeated by those that advise them. Now, this is a strange thing, more serious than a lobotomy, more serious, my friends, than hypnotism. This becomes a process in which the individual continues to reason, carries out his activities, but has become virtually the mental slave to his advisor. It's just possible that's what's happened to some of our presidents. It's just possible that by this process of device, since they automatically stated in their own plan that they were going to use it. Since they said we are going to use it, and we have evidence that they've used something, you can't tell me that a man can be as long as Mr. Kennedy and not have an explanation for it. Maybe we're being kind to him when we suggest he's being dope, but we can't believe that a man could be so foolish. You realize that they contemplate a strategy of bankrupting America and subordinating her to their power and to place you completely at the mercy of the Red Revolution and then fold you in a world government dominated by the socialists. Well, Fort Lewis Jr. stated on Thursday
that one of the things he was quoting was his Kermit Roosevelt column, one of the last ones in her columns, in which she tells about how none other than Mr. Rusk and the State Department have actually pledged the fact that they want no pressure whatsoever brought on any of the communist countries. They want no insult to its leaders. They want Mr. Khrushchev kept in a kind and good mood. And they said that anyone who calls him an enemy is doing a disservice to America. They wanted no military man. They wanted no official in government to refer to it as a Cold War or as an enemy, or to say that we're against the policies of the Soviet Union, because they stated that we're not actually against these policies, because their policies and ours are the economic process of the future, and inevitably we must adopt this policy of statism and of socialism controls the top. And whereas we don't want to embrace all the procedures that have been followed by the Russians, they took their course and we're taking ours, we're going to be allies of the future, and they don't want any opposition and they don't want any talk of Cold War. Now, this, my friends, was even put over the air by Fulton Lewis Jr., and when he comes out that far and starts to quote, that, my friends, he's pretty well assured is a very solid and accurate quote and estimation. Do not forget that the men who have advised the President of the United States to start this entire Foxist condition are none other than Bell and Ball and other Jewish financial wizards out of the Harvard class of socialism, some of whom have now been given jobs as special ambassadors to the financial end of the United Nations, others still work inside the Foreign Service and the State Department. I tell you, the plot right now among a group of these international rascals identified with these who manipulate the bloodstream of Babylon is to surrender and not resist world communism. Suppose I tell you on some of the largest airfields of the United States we don't have 24 planes ready to fly right now. Suppose I tell you why you had such a sad Army Day. I'll tell you why Armed Forces Day was sad, because there wasn't too much to show. I can tell you right now that where we should have on the blueprints and already should be tooling up for the preparation of weapons that are going to be made 6 months to a year from now, we don't have anything in some of these areas for this, and we're just winding up on some of the projects, just marking time. And to make people think that something's going full blast, we have laid off some and we're working others 6 days and 7 days a week with overtime. But actually, in a great number of our defense areas, we don't have the aircraft, we don't have the battlecraft, we don't have the equipment, we don't even have the mock-ups and the preparation for what we would need inside of a year or two. You know what that means? It means to these experts, it means that somebody is planning on leaving America in an area where appeasement is the solution. Surrender. You say, you think it's going to go that way? No, I think God's stepping this thing up faster than that. And I think, my friends, America's going to wake up with a great explosive force. You say, who do you think's running this? International Babylon. When the President of the United States turned on the steel companies, this advice was insanity. It immediately was intended to do what it did, whether he knew whether it was going to do that or not. It immediately caused all investors to recognize if you couldn't get profits out of investment in industry, then there was no sense in putting your money in it, you better get it out. Now, actually, American Jewry wanted America to let go of the police and get its money out. And they knew that this would plunge the market and they'd get less and less money and major stocks would go lower and lower. Because they're planning one of these days on a devaluation of money anyhow. Money isn't a stable thing. It's a commodity they've been manipulating for years. They'd like to have you hold the money. Let me tell you, you better hold America. Someone said to me, Dr. Swift, I own some good stocks and they've been dipping down. Do you think I better sell them? I said, no, you better wait out these Jews. They're going to come back up again. No time to sell those stocks. People that have their money spread out in organizations like United Funds and others are far better off than holding all kinds of assets and dollars that may be worth less within a few days. Oh, you say, but they're plunging down. Well, let me tell you what's happening. Some of these funds were smart enough to not only sell some of their own stocks in areas where they thought they were expendable, and as these things hit the bottom, they bought up blue chip stocks that are going to go back up and are already making money for those that held it. I'm pointing out to you that when the money and the market was down at its low ebb the other day, that loaned in Zurich, Switzerland's international Jew banker investments, bought up American stock outside of United Funds to help to bring back the market, they said, to stabilize it for a short period. But I can tell you this, straight across the line, that those stocks are all going to dip again, and international bankers plan on picking it up as Babylon wants to take over. Now, you know what's going to happen? They're designed to plunge America into an economic depression and also subordinate our society at a lower status of living than we've ever had before into a world government under their directive is going to boomerang because America's not going to buy another depression. They didn't know where it came from the last time, but we know where it comes from this time. It comes from the Jews. You say, prove that? All right. I've got their statistics right here to prove that these financial Jewish banks control America. And if there's a depression, then they gave it to us. And if there's a depression, they're all through. Amen. You say, how do you know? Well, God tells me there's real truth. He said this great mass of the surging sea is not going to take it. And Babylon's going to be swallowed up, and the cry is going to be, oi, 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 reaching to the heavens. That's what it says in the book of Revelation. Just like a millstone dropped into the sea will that great Babylon fall. Significantly, I just want to add this picture. Mystery Babylon has manipulated the exchange of the world. They want to crush the exchange system of the British Commonwealth of Nations. They want to force America into a virtual business receivership, into the hands of international world banking completely. They want to see masses of American labor out of work. They want to see American factories closed down. They want to absorb the last saleable dollar by goods which they will flood America with. Then they'd like to see the great common market of Europe crumble. You say, well, if everybody joins, it'll get strong. No, it'll be strong if Germany, France, low-land countries can keep their common market. If Britain stays in the commonwealth market and we stay in the great Western Hemisphere organization of society and protection of our own economy with walls of tariff and proper balance according to the needs. I can tell you this tonight. That if all the money that people think was so valuable, if all this money is tied in the strategy which they now have planned for it, to devaluation, then all savings involved in that money would be insecure. It also means, my friends, that you look at money as wealth, and the Bible is trying to make you see that money is not wealth. It's the things that have been produced that are wealth, and money is only a check against those things. If it could be devaluated, it's fraudulent. That's one of the reasons why I want you to recognize that as Babylon falls, God promised to replace this with another program. You know, one of these days you're going to see a great economic institution backed by the Congress of the United States, as Congress is supposed to have such an institution according to the Constitution. It'll be a great interest-free institution whose economy will be backed by American production. And you may discover at that day that all this phony money will be redeemed with good United States notes backed on this kind of interest-free economy. I can tell you this, the day America gets divinely organized, interest-free economy, the day that there is the money of a nation to move the goods that the people produce, the day, my friends, that the production creates the wealth and the wealth is secure, the day that happens, the greatest exodus out of America of parasites that ever took place will take place. We repeat what we've said to you before. As one man who had quite a lot of experience with these people said, they are a parasite living upon the body politic. But the insanity of Mystery Babylon is that it kills the body that the parasite has to live on and destroys themselves all the time. God looks upon this evil, sees this design to destroy the nations of the kingdom, to crucify Christianity on a cross of gold, and says, I'm going to heap my judgments upon her double as she's measured them out to you. So I tell you this tonight, that the hands to control the money of a nation can create for it depressions, catastrophes, wars, and trouble. God Almighty said that you're to come out from under this last bondage. This last exodus of yours will come out from under Babylon and out from under this economic Egypt that they have developed. And never will Babylon have control again. And Babylon will never be brought to remembrance again. For the people of God's kingdom will be free. So we cite to you this tonight. The bloodstream is money. Take the money out of the hand of Babylon, and every one of these bankers will go back someplace else. Not where they came from. They're not welcome there. They may go down where they just built their new government building. But listen to this. Then I said, how can we rid America of communism? How can we fold up these phony foundations? How can we stop this propaganda that fills the press and the radio and television with lies and brainwashes our people? I'll tell you what, how to do it. Cut off money from them. That's their bloodline. That's their blood system. Without money, they couldn't accomplish anything. It's not money that they earn because they don't earn any. It's money that they steal. And so again, back to the Constitution. And back to the Bible. When you get through, white men will control their own destiny. And they'll have the wealth of their creation. And what they save up, they'll know will be good if they retire. Because it'll be one set of weights and measures. And it'll stand. How can a nation like this have scarcity? We can produce more than we can eat. We've got oars in the ground. We've got technology. We have the finest assembly lines in the world. How can you paralyze a great nation like this by just suddenly saying, we're not going to let you spend your own money that you print and let us endorse? You must be hypnotized if you think you need the endorsement of these rascals to circulate your own money backed by your own production. $1.25 trillion. That, my friends, is what Richard Byrd, Senator Byrd, told the peoples of America on Tuesday or Wednesday of this week. $1.25 trillion is now the American debt limit. Now, we've already reached it. If you ask Mr. Kennedy, say, we're not really a financial bad spot. We haven't gone beyond the debt limit. Well, every time we get up to approximately the limit, the pressure is put on, and the legislature in Washington raises the limit. We now raise the limit above all the capital wealth of all of the owned property in the United States. And we've reached it. Someone says, how far in debt are we? You're in the hot for your house, your car, everything you own to international Jews, and they haven't paid anything for it, and you ought to tear the whole thing up and send them packing. Someone said to me, we've got to honor this debt. Who's telling you you've got to honor anything that you honor to the Jews? FDR one time said we owe this to ourselves, but quite obviously we don't. Quite obviously that this whole thing has been a piece of foxious international intrigue. I tell you that America is going to choose in a crisis hour whether we're going to cast out Babylon's economic order or whether we're going to descend into slavery forever. Between that choice, that Satan is where you go. These foundations who have been developed to control American economy, we now have a design so complete that they have designed to surrender our independence, divide America up in provinces, put over international control with international armies, international administration, and international division of all of these areas into the hands of selected world government leaders who come out of their own trained directives. They talk about it, and they have it in their own literature. They even design how it's to be done, and I have a great number of pieces of literature from these foundations in Washington that discuss this fact. They're trying to get the church to sell this government and program. They would even have the church do the work of Antichrist, and then stand back and say, brotherhood, fraternity, equality, liberty, and we will make the whole masses of our population embrace these words while they fulfill our objectives. And we enslave them with money. And so, you got anything against money? No. I have something against the manipulators who have made this an evil instrument in their hands. I tell you that this emancipation is most essential and is a part of God's plan for your nation.